sins. Avodah Zorah, Gilui Arayos, Shfichas Domim. Needless to say, that generation was considered Rishoyim, people who were involved in the worst of the worst. The Gemara in Mikdash Sheni, the second base of Mikdash, they were Osik in Torah, Mitzvahs, Gemara, and the Sosodian asked them if they were very righteous, they were very proper, why was that destroyed? But the Gemara, Neshahaisa bo they were. Because there was sinas chinam, baseless hatred. The lamdachad, this teaches us, sheshkulas sinas chinam keneged shlosh averos. This teaches us that sinas chinam is the equivalent to living immorally, to serving idols, to murder. Baseless hatred is on the same parallel as those three. Then the Gemara has a long debate as to which was worse, the first Beis HaMikdash, that generation, or the second. And after a lengthy time, the Gemara says, Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar both agree that the Rishonim, Shenizgala Avonim, it was clear and obvious what their sin was. Therefore, of that exile was also revealed. It was to be 70 years and no longer. However, Achronim, the second Beis HaMikdash, which was destroyed for a different reason, Shalonizgala Avonim, their sin was not revealed, Lonizgala Ketzam, their time was not revealed either. Because in the second Beis HaMikdash, the sin was hidden, therefore the end of the second exile is also this hidden from us. Rashi explains, what does it mean, Achronim Lonizgala Avonim, B'nei Mikdash Sheni Rishoyim Hayu B'Seser. And the people of the second Beis HaMikdash were Rishoyim B'Seser, were hidden Rishoyim. Their wickedness was hidden, it wasn't outward, it was cloistered. Therefore, because their wickedness was cloistered, therefore on some level they were worse even than the first Beis HaMikdash. Therefore the end of that exile is not revealed, and we don't know when it is. I'd like to ask two penetrating questions on this Gemara. The first is on the Gemara itself, and that is that it doesn't sound equivalent. The three cardinal sins are Avodah Zorah, Gilui Arayos, and Shfichas Domim. A Jew is obligated to give up his life not to murder, not to worship idols, and not to live in an illicit relationship. Those are the three major sins. Those are unparalleled by anything else in Kol HaTorah Kula. Sinas Chinam is not a mitzvah. Baseless hatred is at least violating a Lo Saseh. Lo Sisna Zachicha Bavavecha, maybe a mitzvah Saseh. But it's nowhere near the category of the big three. It's nowhere near the league. And yet the Gemara is saying that it's the same. But worse than that, the Gemara tells us that in the second Beis HaMikdash, the baseless hatred was not seen. It was not noticed. Now, gentlemen, I don't know about you, but I know that if I hated someone, that person would know about it. If you hate someone, you burn down their crops, you let their livestock escape, you pour sand in their wells. If you hate someone, they know about it. And if they don't know about it, surely you know about it. So how could the Gemara tell us that the second Beis HaMikdash, the sin was hidden, it wasn't known, it was besaser? If the sin was baseless hatred, the recipient of the hatred surely knew about it, and if he didn't know about it, then the one who hated him definitely knew about it. So I'd like to see if we can answer these two questions. But to do that, we need a little bit of a perspective. In the time of the Beis HaMikdash, if a Jew spoke Lashon Hara, he was afflicted with saras. Saras is a state of tumah, a state of impurity, which surfaces in one level with some type of skin disease. If he becomes a tzaras, if he becomes a metzora, he has to leave the machane, he has to step outside of the camp, and he has to separate himself. The tahor process is complex, and he has to do a number of things to become purified. One of the things that he does, the pasuk tells us, he brings two tziporim tahoros, two birds that are kosher birds. Rashi is bothered by why those particular karbonos, why is that part of his tahor process? Says Rashi very simply, because the goyim boin al lashon hara. These type of afflictions, these nega'im, this status of tzaras comes to a person for speaking Lashon Hara. Shumaise petute dvorim, which is an issue of chatter. Lefikach, therefore, huskugula tarasu tziporim, therefore his atonement is with birds, shemefatetim tamid betziftzuf kol, his atonement is with birds that chirp. The bird is constantly chirping, constantly chattering, since his sin came through chatter, came through babble, came through Lashon Hara. Therefore, it's only appropriate that his tahor process, his atonement, is done through the bird, which is constantly chirping. And that's how Rashi explains this pasuk. The problem with that Rashi, I believe, is rather obvious. That is, Lashon Hara is in chirping. Lashon Hara is hurtful, damaging, degrading words. The Rambam defines Lashon Hara. His actual definition of Lashon Hara is dvarim, words, shem nishmu ish mipi ish lahazik chaveru, words that hurt, words that damage, words that ruin a person's reputation, that destroy his business, ruin a shidduch, destroy a marriage. They're damaging words. A bird chirping is not a parallel to Lashon Hara. Birds have an innocent chirping sound that sounds so sweet in the morning. You hear the blabber, the chirp. It's very cute. It's very sweet. But Lashon Hara is very nasty, very deceitful, and very damaging. What is the connection between birds chirping and Lashon Hara? And I believe this question will get us a better understanding as to this chet called Lashon Hara. Recently, my son, who's 6 years old, was examined in school, and they told us that he needs OT, occupational therapy. His writing is very crude, and he needs help learning how to write. Okay, now, as a parent, obviously I'm an advocate for my child. Whatever he needs, we'll do, etc. But there was a real difference in the reaction to that meeting between my wife and myself. My wife was very concerned. Oh my goodness, occupational therapy, won't have good penmanship. We have to make sure he does it. My attitude was much more lackadaisical. I really didn't care. We'll do it, it's fine, but it really didn't bother me. And I'll explain to you why it didn't bother me. If I ask you guys, who wrote the Declaration of Independence? So probably, you'll tell me, if you've studied or remember American history, you'll tell me it was written by Thomas Jefferson. But if I asked you who penned the words, who actually wrote the words on that document? Remember, it was the olden days with parchment and quill pen. Who actually wrote that document? Now, it happens to be I know the answer, but only because I looked it up. But the answer is Timothy Matlack. You see, John Hancock signed big and bold right in the middle. But his penmanship was not quite perfect enough, and they hired a professional penman, Timothy Matlack. You see, back in the olden days, penmanship represented the individual. Who you were was spoken volumes by your handwriting, because all documents that you gave forward was done in your hand. If you wrote a brief, it was done in your hand. If you wrote a letter, it was done in your handwriting. Penmanship was a huge and very important part to a successful individual. Now, I write about 1 to 2 hours a day. My penmanship is not really up there. As a matter of fact, most doctors are jealous. My handwriting is so bad, I can't read my own handwriting. But it doesn't matter. You know why? Because the 1 or 2 I spend a day writing is not done with a pen. I use my laptop and I type it in, and it's crystal clear. You see, a lot happened since the signing of the Declaration of Independence till nowadays. Around the 1850s, there was something called a shrivener. A lawyer would hire a scribe, pay him 4 cents per 100 words to write down his legal briefs. Mark Twain was one of the first people to actually use the Remington. Remington invented the typewriter, and I saw the letter that Mark Twain wrote to his brother with many mistakes in it, but it said something about the fact that this thing can write as quickly as I can, because the typewriter was a modern invention. In the 1960s, IBM came out with the Selectric. You guys don't remember this, but the Selectric had something called a daisy wheel. A daisy wheel was this little ball in the center that had all the letters on it, and it spun around. With an IBM Selectric, a good typist could type at 90 words a minute. A phenomenal speed. She could take a letter in 2.5 minutes, do a page, 4-page brief in 10 minutes. Phenomenal breakthrough in speed. As you know today, printing is not done any longer by an IBM Selectric. And your typical laser printer prints a whole lot faster than that. Today's fastest printers print somewhere around 300 pages a minute. That's 4 pages a second. If you write 250 words per page, you're talking a 4-page letter, not in 10 minutes, but in a second. We're talking output that's so fast, so phenomenally quick, that an entire book, 300-page book, in a minute. And it's done. And even if you use a regular laser printer that prints at a slow 30 pages a minute, that's a page every 2 seconds. The world has changed. There are machines now that output at such speed that ancient man could not ever envision or believe the output. I claim that this is a very important mashal for us. Most mitzvahs that we do take a lot of time. If you buy a lulav and esrog, it takes you a long time to buy it. You pick it up, you do the mitzvah. If you put on tefillin, it's also a slow process. Putting a mezuzah on your door is not that quick. Most mitzvahs that we do take a long time. The one exception are those mitzvahs that we do with the mouth. The mouth moves at a speed that's unparalleled. The mouth blabbers, the mouth races through things, and you won't believe what you can accomplish or destroy with the output of the mouth. And let me give you a little example. Imagine we have a fellow who's putting on tefillin in the morning by Shacharis, sitting next to his buddy. Puts on his shel yad. Right before he puts on his shel yad, he says, "Hey, did you hear what happened to Moshe?" "No, what happened?" "Oh man, last night he got stopped by the cops." "Yeah, so?" "Well, he got stopped by the cops and he wouldn't show his license." "Eh, jerk." "Jerk." Takes out his shel yad. "Yeah, you know, no reason. He just wouldn't show his license, put the attitude on the cop, and the cop put handcuffs on him. And the jerk, you know what he did? He continued the attitude. The cop put him in the back seat." "He is such an idiot. The guy's a blooming idiot. You know something? The truth is, he's like his brothers also. They're also a bunch of... But I tell you the truth, I can't even fault him. And everyone in Flatbush have that same arrogant attitude. They're a bunch of... I don't know." Starts Dominic Shacharis. Okay. Now, I want you to analyze very carefully what you've just witnessed. Moshe is such a jerk. One expression of Lashon Hara. Do you know what he did last night? He gave mouth to the cop. Second expression of Lashon Hara. Not only that, he wouldn't stop once the cop put the handcuffs on him. Third expression of Lashon Hara. But I tell you the truth, I can't really fault him. All of his brothers are that way too. Fourth expression of Lashon Hara. But I tell you the truth, he learns it from the people in Flappers. They're all that way. A bunch of arrogant buffoons. Fifth expression of Lashon Hara. But now about an entire community, 10,000 Jews in one fell swoop. The tefillin that he put on, the shel yad and the shel rosh, one mitzvah, two mitzvahs, we could debate it, but the 5, 20, or maybe 100, we'll soon see, Losa says that he violated, were a whole lot quicker. And here's a tremendous point that the Chafetz Chaim says. What did he gain? What was the benefit? Did somebody pay him a lot of money because now he smeared another Jew's name? Did somebody give him a grand award because he defamed another Jew? But not only what was his benefit, what was the taiva? Did he have some unbelievable urge, this need to defame the guy, to smear him? Did he have some burning desire? Whatever, just prattle, just talk. You know, let me tell you a story, talking between Shel Yad and Shel Rosh, whatever, who cares, whatever. Just prattling, the mouth moving, the output so fast, the damage very real. But here's the point. Without any tremendous taiva, without even much thought about it, just the words kind of leak out like prattle, like blabble, just coming on, going, the faucet's on, and it spews forth. And I believe, my friends, that's the answer to this Rashi. Do you know why it is that the Metzora brings those two birds? 80% of our Lashon Hara is not malintended. 80% of the time that we malign, defame other Jews, it's not because we want to destroy them. It's not because we have a tremendous desire. It's just we're there. Hey, did you hear the story? We're filling the space. There's an empty thing in our mind called the space of quiet. We need to fill it with some noise. We fill it with stories without even understanding the damage that's wrought. Much like the bird that chirps without thought, just on and on, most of the Lashon Hara that we speak is exactly that. It's prattle, it's jabber, it's blab. It doesn't really mean anything to us. It doesn't really come with any tremendous desire. And the Chafetz Chaim says, therefore, almost every example of Lashon Hara is also a Chilul Hashem. You see, if you have a tremendous taiva to do something, all right, you failed in a sayin. You had a tremendous appetite, and there was a cheeseburger there. There was an issue with something you shouldn't be looking at. You were pulled, you were driven. All right, it's understandable. But watch your taiva. Watch your drive to malign, defame, destroy the reputation of another Jew. 80% of the time, it's just prattle, but the damage is there. The losa says, is violated, says the Chafetz Chaim. Almost every example is a chil Hashem, because b'shat nafsha, with just a callousness, with showing total disregard to Hashem's Torah, you say the words, "I just don't care," and you violate a losa say in the Torah. And again, I believe the reason why the Metzora brings these birds is because 80% of the Lashon Hara we speak is just that. Much like chirping the bird, just blabber, just prattle. And therefore, it's appropriate for the atonement to be the birds. Now, that's so what I would call the good news. The good news is, because if you're not very motivated, you're not really driven, it's not that hard to cure. But let's focus for a minute on why it is that we speak Lashon Hara. The Chafetz Chaim in his Sefer says that there are two basic reasons that we speak. The first, I'd like to be Mitzayer with a mushel. Imagine for a minute the following. Imagine a Rav in a shul calls together a major assembly of the entire shul. Rabosai, I want everybody in shul Tuesday night. Everybody gathers. He gets up in the bima and he says, I don't know how to say this. I can't believe I have to say this, but I must tell you as follows. At the shul dinner last Sunday, the food was treif. But I don't mean like a questionable heksher. I mean it was treif. The caterer called me up apologetic. He was crying. Somehow the turkey that he served, it turned out it wasn't turkey. It was ham. Someone switched it. It was ham that we all ate. Rabosai, this is terrible. Okay. Now you'd imagine that everyone there would be distraught. There'd be takanas. There'd be tshuva. There'd be a very seriousness to the attitude that everyone took to that event of the last Sunday. Okay. Now imagine a similar situation. The Rav gets up to give a shiur about Hilchos Lashon Hara. Rabosai, I want you to know, we all, oftentimes not meaning to, but we speak Lashon Hara, and everybody in the audience recognizes that it's true. At one point or another, I have spoken Lashon Hara. Is the reaction going to be the same? Are people going to be, oh my goodness, I can't believe it. Oh my, I spoke Lashon Hara, ayvei. I beg to say that will not be the reaction. And the reason why that will not be the reaction is because ham is treif. You can't eat treif meat. It's forbidden. It's really, really forbidden. But the reality is the way we deal with Lashon Hara is, come on. I know it's not a mitzvah, but it's not like a losa in the Torah. Not like it's forbidden. Not like treif meat. It's not like really usser. Our attitude towards Lashon Hara is kind of like dieting. You know, I really should watch my diet. You know, I really, my caloric intake, a little, my fats. And I really, you know, when the waiter comes by at the chasana, and he's got that tray full of the most delicious thing, I really shouldn't. That's kind of like Lashon Hara. You know, I really shouldn't. Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. I'm on my diet, off my diet. I should watch it more. The posik of our generation. The final word in halacha is the Mishnah Berurah. As you know, the Mishnah Berurah got his name by writing a different sefer before he wrote the Mishnah Berurah. The sefer they wrote beforehand is called the Chafetz Chaim, hence his name, the Chafetz Chaim. And the entire focus of the book, if you ask me what the chiddush of the entire sefer is that Lashon Hara is as usher as treif meat. It's as forbidden as treif. Just as it is forbidden to eat treif, so too it is forbidden to speak Lashon Hara. And if you read through the Sefer a little bit, you'll see there's no comparison between the two. Chafetz Chaim counts the amount of los assays and assays that you're regularly violating by speaking Lashon Hara, and you'll get a pachad, you'll be filled with fear. Number one, loselech rachel ba'mecha, do not be a talebearer in your nation, is a full lav equivalent to ham, to cheeseburgers, to any other los assay in the Torah. Number two, there's an isser for you to hear it, and an isser for you to be mekabel it. Number three, lifnei evil lo siste michshol. If I'm speaking Lashon Hara, I'm allowing you to violate the listening to Lashon Hara and potentially accepting it. Number four, if you're listening to me, you're allowing me to speak. So you're violating a lo siste of lifnei evil. Number five, there's an assay. There's an assay of remember that which Hashem did to Miriam. Number six, there's almost always an issue of chil Hashem. The Chafetz Chaim counts 17 los assays, 14 assays, and 3 curses that are associated directly with Lashon Hara. He says, while it's true that it's unlikely that you'll hit every one of them in a particular episode, don't worry about it, he guarantees. If you're not careful, he guarantees you'll be over all of them many hundreds, if not thousands, of times in your life. And if you think about it, it's a rather fear-inspiring concept. Because the reality is, b'shat nefesh, with just a casual sort of, hey, did you hear? You can rack up los assay after los assay, each one far worse than eating treif, in a speed that's actually scary, with an output that's beyond description. Most mitzvahs we do are kind of like handwriting, very slow. Most aveiras that we do also take a lot of effort, and we're very conscious. But the mouth is a laser printer that spews out stuff at an amazing speed. For the good, it's tremendous. On the bad, it's very frightening. 17, 14, and 3, that's the count. And if you want to understand what this means, it's really quite simple. You know, if a fellow breaks into a liquor store, it's not just the breaking and entry that he's accused of. When he's hauled into court, there are many counts. Number one, carrying an illegal weapon. Number two, breaking an entry. Number three, breaking in with the intent to commit a felony. Number four, destruction of private property while attempting to commit a crime. Each violation carries its own punishment. Each violation is separate, and he's punished for each. Says the Chofetz Chaim, that's exactly the point. Each dibur that you speak has many elements to it. Many los haseis and haseis that are involved in the one dibur. But again, let's go back to the illustration. It's rare that the episode has just one derogatory statement. Moshe's a jerk, and his brothers too, and all the Jews in Flatbush. There are 3, 4, 5, or 6 statements in almost any given story. So start doing the math. Start figuring out the amount of los haseis that each episode has, multiply it by the 4 or 5 or 6 or 10 derogatory statements that you made. Include the fellow who's listening, who talks, yeah, you're right, I knew he was a jerk. I never knew he was that stupid, but now I hear, wow, he really is a real fool. You've gotten him in on the act also. And the most interesting part about it is, imagine in our break-in entry, the fellow holds a gun to the liquor store owner, the liquor store hands over the cash, and our buddy runs out, jumps into his car, and gets into a car accident with a bus. The bus careens off the cliff, and 60 people go to their death. Not only did he break in and enter, not only did he do all of those crimes, but he'll be accountable for manslaughter for 60 people. The Jews in Flatbush are arrogant buffoons. 10,000 Jews just put into a very ugly category. 10,000 Jews just maligned, defamed. Do you know what that carries in Shemayim? Do you know what the punishment? It is very difficult to understand it. A number of years ago, here in Muncie, there was a butcher who was accused of feeding treif to the community. And it became clear that he was guilty as charged. But it wasn't one episode. It was repeatedly, for years. For years, he fed treif food, and he was a very popular butcher. It wasn't just to individuals. He sold to many yeshivas, many bar mitzvah caterers, many wedding caterers. The whole town was in uproar because it meant the whole town had eaten treif. Everyone had to kasher the dishes, etc., etc., etc. Okay. If you were to ask the average person their attitude towards this man, it was disgust. What kind of repugnant, vile person would do that? To make some money, you sell treif food to Jews who rely on you, you're a frum Jew and you do that? Most people, when thinking or talking about this individual, not only had no rachmanis, the word vile, disgust, is the only thing that would come out. Okay. Whether that's appropriate or not, I'd like to share with you an interesting observation. What if I were to tell you that there are many people that you know who do far worse than that man on a regular basis? I got to tell you a story. Whoa, you won't believe this. And he tells the story to just 5 or 6 people by Shacharis. And then he goes to work, and hey, I don't know if you guys heard this, but you got to hear the story. And he tells just another 5 or 6 people. And then a little bit later in the afternoon, he's on the phone, hey, I got to tell you this story. And he tells the story, and tells the story, and tells the story. And before you know it, a single event about a single person has become widespread around the town. And if you don't hear it by guys as much, just listen to women talking. Sometimes I'm absolutely aghast. A woman could go to a wedding, and from the beginning to the end, 3 hours, do nothing but blab, 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 blab. And if you listen to the conversations, sometimes for some people, so much of it is blatant lashon hara that it actually is frightening. On and on about this one and that one and that one and this one and this one and that one. And if you count up the episodes and you dissect each part of it and you start racking up the los haseis and haseis, los haseis and haseis, you see that this woman did far worse far worse than our friend who sold treif meat to Muncie. But what's the difference? The difference is treif, you're not allowed to eat. The Torah says it's forbidden. Nowhere does the Torah say it's forbidden to speak Lashon Hara. It says the posig of our generation, writing an entire sefer about it, it is far more egregious, far more usser, more forbidden than treif meat. If you have a choice, don't take me up on this, don't do this at home, but if you have a choice of eating a cheeseburger or speaking a good story of Lashon Hara, you're much better off with the cheeseburger. One or two los says, story of Lashon Hara, you're going to rack up dozens and dozens and dozens. So the first reason why we don't speak Lashon Hara, why we do speak Lashon Hara, is because I don't think we understand that it's really, really usser, really forbidden, chazer treif, really not allowed to do it. But there's a second reason the Chofetz Chaim says that we speak Lashon Hara. This isn't Lashon Hara. It's true. He really did this. You can't tell me this is Lashon Hara. The guy really did it. Simon Aleph, Perek Aleph, the very first thing the Chofetz Chaim says in Halacha Lashon Hara is the definition of Lashon Hara is that it's true. To become Lashon Hara, it must be true. If it's not true, it's something else called Matzi Shem Ra. The very definition of that which constitutes Lashon Hara is a true story. A story that Moshe really did. A story that hurt him, that hurts his reputation, hurts his name, hurts the way people look at him, but it's true. That is the definition of Lashon Hara. So the very first point you have to remember is that when it's true, it's Lashon Hara, and I think that brings us to the second reason why Lashon Hara is so common. If you open the New York Times, you'll see right there, their catchphrase, their positioning statement, all the news that's fit to print. You see, libel in this country, by definition, must be false. If it's true, there's nothing wrong with putting it on the headlines, putting it on CNN, and blasting it across the internet. It's only if it's false that there's an issue called libel. And in the world we live in, maligning a person, destroying their fame, destroying their reputation, is 100% permitted. And as a matter of fact, not only is it permitted, it's a real good way to become popular. You open a blog and put this stuff on, and all of a sudden, you're famous, and you're making a lot of money on your Google AdWord traffic that's coming in. By the way, you know what blog stands for? Bli emes ugvul, without any truth or limit. No truth to the word stated there, no limit to the amount of damage that you're doing. It's an acronym, blog, bli emes, ugvul. It's a Lashon Hara machine. The New York Times used to be bad. CNN used to be an issue. Blogs are without any limits. No one is held accountable. You say what you want, write what you want, just blab, and it's unbelievable. And the beauty of it is, thousands of people get to read your vile, unbased statements. Not just one or two. Instantly, across the globe, thousands of people get to read your insights and damaging comments. The reason why the Torah is so makbid on Lashon Hara is not because the Torah is very strict, very draconian. It's because Lashon Hara is really very, very damaging. Really, really very hurtful. And the Chofetz Chaim makes a very powerful point. He says, obviously, any example of Lashon Hara is a violation of a Haftar Re'acha Kamocha. He says, let's make the following observation. Imagine you overhear a conversation and you hear your name. And you sort of listen. And they're talking about you. Oh no, oh my God, I don't believe it. You know that they're telling over that story. Oh, I can't, oh, I hope he shuts up, oh no. And he's telling every detail, he's telling every livid detail, and the guy next to him is like being macabre. You're like cringing, oh, maybe somebody shut him up, somebody stop him. Why is it that we speak Lashon Hara? Very simply, because the guy isn't here. The single greatest cure for Lashon Hara is when Ploni, who you were talking about, shows up. As in, let's say you're telling a story and the Ploni you were talking about walks in. What happened? Why did you suddenly stop telling the story? I'm never telling in front of him. Says the Chofetz Chaim, almost every example of Lashon Hara is not only a violation of Ve'ahavt Recha Kamocha, but there's a pasuk. Cursed be the person who hits his friend Beseser in hiding. What do you mean who hits his friend Beseser? It's because he's not around that you're talking about him. It's because you're not concerned about his fame, his good fortune. You're not concerned about his covet, his money. If he were here, you'd be very, very different in your approach. Says the Chofetz Chaim, makarei or beseser is a curse if you hit your friend in private. And you'll excuse me for giving a mushal, because I think a mushal is due. I want you guys to imagine for a minute that I've discovered a cloak of invisibility. I put it over me, and I disappear from sight. Not here. Not here. Whoa, this is so cool. And I walk into Beis Medrash, and no one sees me. Oh, this is amazing. And I walk over to one guy when he's sort of like looking off in space, and I close his Gemara. Hey, who did that? This is fun. Another pair of horses learning, and I see the bottling. I take the Gemara away. Hey, where'd they go? What's going on here? This is really good. I'm having a good time. And I see another guy. I turn the Gemara upside down, put it away, put it back and forth. After a while, I get a little bit more bold, a little bit more daring. A guy is walking by. I stick my foot out. Hey, what happened? It is getting to be fun. I see another guy walking by. I punch him. Oh, what's going on? I see another guy. Kick him. Oh, body's falling flat. This is great. But the joke's no longer so funny. And says the Chofetz Chaim, that is Lashon Hara. You're damaging a guy, ruining his shinuch, ruining his business, ruining his reputation, maybe destroying his marriage. Now, it looks bloodless, it looks victimless, but the damage is done. Just because the Western world doesn't recognize it as damage doesn't mean it's not damage. Exactly the mitzvah of Haftarach Amocha means love your neighbor as yourself. You're very, very makbid about your own kavod. You're very, very careful about the way you project yourself to the world. Why aren't you so careful about the way you project other people? Because you don't really care about them. Why about your own money, your own issues, are you so sensitive, but to the other guys you're not? Because you deeply care about, the other guy you don't. Therefore, it's a violation of Haftarach Kamocha. And my friends, I believe that's also Pshat in his Gemara. Do you know what Chofetz Chaim says Pshat in his Gemara, Sinas Chinam is? The manifestation of Sinas Chinam in that generation was Lashon Hara. You see, every example of Lashon Hara is an example of baseless hatred. Not violent, angry hatred, not burning down his crops, but the type of callousness. I don't care about you. You know why I speak about you and tell the world that you're a jerk? Because I just don't care. If I cared about you, if I loved you as my brother, if I loved you as myself, believe me, I wouldn't be maligning you. The reason I am is because I just don't care. Says the Chofetz Chaim, that is a manifestation of baseless hatred. Not violent, vile hatred, but a more ill-defined, more difficult to notice hatred. And I believe that's Pshat in the Gemara. The hate of that generation was not nicker. It wasn't recognizable. Because people were not running around burning their crops of their neighbors. They weren't filling the wells with dirt. They were not angry, violent people. But they were speaking baseless, damaging words. They were damaging each other's reputations, their fame, their businesses, their shidduchim, their marriages. They were hurting each other, makrei b'seser. They were punching each other with this cloak of invisibility, hurting each other. Because the sin wasn't recognizable, it's much more difficult to cure. You see, if you really hate a guy, he knows it and you know it. If you have one of these low-grade hatreds where it's really a callousness, you just don't care about him, he's not within your parameter of people, it's much more difficult to cure because you don't even see the disease. And I believe that's what the Gemara is telling us. If the Beis HaMikdash has not been rebuilt in our generation, it's because we're involved in the same thing. We don't hate other people. In that generation, the very Gemara said, the second Beis HaMikdash, they did Gemilas Chesed. They were nice people. They were Osek B'Torah, Mitzvahs, U'Gemilas Chesedim. They had Gemachs, they gave Tzedakah. They were very kind, nice people. But being a kind, nice person doesn't mean that you're nice all the time, you're nice to everyone, and doesn't mean that you don't engage in very hurtful behavior. You're very nice at the Shabbos table as you welcome your guests in, and you tell them everything about everyone you know in the community. And that's very nice, but you're destroying people's lives. And I believe that's Pshat in the Gemara. And if you'd like to know the final question, which was, how does the Gemara compare that to Avodah Zarah, Gilui Arayos, and Shfichas Damim, the cardinal three? You're obligated to give up your life not to serve idols. You're obligated to give up your life not to murder. How could the Gemara compare Sinas Chinam, baseless hatred, Lashon Hara, to those? I believe the answer to that is something also the Chofetz Chaim says in a Sefer. If you take a very thin thread, and take another thread, and another thread, and add another one and another one, another one, and twist them and twist them and twist them before you know you have a thick rope that can hang a man. Lashon hara, the damage is the output of the mouth. It's not a single incident of lashon hara. It's not a single episode of a number of incidents. It's the constant deluge, the mouth outputting, the 300 pages a minute of that laser printer called the human mouth that spews forth stuff all day long, hundreds, thousands on a regular basis, and the buildup is so powerful that it becomes the equivalent of the cardinal three. That, says the Gemara, is the reason why the second base of Mikdash was destroyed. And I believe that's Pshat in the Gemara. We don't recognize it that way. We don't look at it that way. We don't view it that way. It looks like a bloodless, victimless crime. Who's hurt? It's just a story. Cute, nice, we laugh. It's all cute. Until you understand that there's another human being involved. If that human being were at the table, believe me, I and you would turn red and purple and pink if we knew that he heard in the other room what we had said about him. But because he's not here, we turn a callousness, we turn a deaf ear, and we go on opening our mouths. And the huge, huge chiddush that we have to understand is that it's as usher, as treif, far worse. And that's a huge step forward in our understanding. It requires a lot of motivation to work on lashon hara because the human mouth works overtime all the time. To me, the single most motivating force that gets me very, very shooken up is something that's quoted in the Orcha Sadikim, almost exactly word for word in the Chovos Levavos. They both tell over the following. There was a certain individual who was a chassid, a very righteous, pious Jew. And another individual spoke lashon hara about him. This chassid, says the Orcha Sadikim, took a tray, took the finest foods that he had, sent it with a messenger to deliver the following message. Tell him, I've sent him my best because he sent me my best, his best. Says the Orcha Sadikim, any time you speak lashon hara about another person, they take your zchusim and give it to him. What this chassid was doing was telling the man, you gave me a present. When you spoke bad about me, you gave me some of your zchusim, you gave me a present, I want to give you back a present. And says the Chovos Levavos, repeating the same words, anytime you speak about a person, they take from your zchusim and give it to a person. If he speaks bad about you, they take from him and give it to you. And the Orcha Sadikim says, you'll come to Asid Lovo and you'll find on your platter beautiful zchusim. And you'll say in the Yom HaDin, but I never did these things. And he'll say, don't worry about it. Those who spoke badly about you did. And then you'll search around for certain things that you know you really did, that you really feel you deserve Olam Haba for, and they won't be there. And you'll say, but what about this? And what about that? And they'll say, I'm sorry. You spoke badly about so-and-so and so-and-so. We took it from you and gave it to him. And my friends, if you know how hard it is to gain schusim, to me this is a very frightening and very powerful concept. Understanding that which the Gemara tells us, the first base of Mikdash were clear, overt, obvious Rishoyim. Avodah Zarah, Gilui Raya, Shfichas Damim, it doesn't get worse than that. They knew they were Rishoyim and everyone along with them knew it. But the second base of Mikdash was a different world. They were practicing Gemilas Chesed. They were learning Torah. They were involved in mitzvahs. But says the Gemara, they were also involved in something far worse, baseless hatred. The question is, how is it possible that baseless hatred is the equivalent? The answer is, it's not one incident. It's many, many occasions. Because the human mouth outputs so quickly. There's so many opportunities to speak Lashon Hara that the end result is it's equal. And if you want to know how both Amoraim could agree that the second base of Mikdash, no one knew what the sin was. How could it be baseless hatred? No one knows. Because what we're discussing is not overt, obvious hatred. We're discussing sins of the mouth. And most Lashon Hara that we speak is not motivated. The reason why you bring those two birds is because the Masorah spoke Lashon Hara. 80% of the Lashon Hara we speak is just prattle, just blabber. The mouth goes, which is, hey, did you hear? I want to tell you a story. Hey, did you hear? And that's the good news. That's the good news because all you have to do is put the brain on. Just understand and you stop. The Chofetz Chaim's advice, and it is a very, very sound piece of advice. If you want to deal with this issue, there really is only one solution. learn the halachas, study the halachas. And there are many different systems, many different ways, and there are all kinds of siddurim, and it's a very wise person who sets himself up a regular seder to learn halachas lashon hara, because only when you become cognizant, when you become aware, can you stop it. When you become aware, it's so easy, because again, the human mouth works, but all you got to do is become conscious, and you shut it. 80% it's prattle, like the birds chirping, so all you have to do is stop it. It's real easy. It's very rare that we want to destroy a person. We're not mean-spirited people. We're not trying to hurt other people. Just being conscious stops most of it. The biggest problem that we have is that we view lashon hara kind of like a diet. You know, I should pass on the dessert. I should watch my cholesterol. The Chofetz Chaim wrote that sefer primarily to put one point forward. It's not like dessert. It's as treif as chazir. It's as bad as that person serving the entire muntzi treif food. Why? Because when you tell one person, you violated many, many losases. He tells another, who tells another, tells another. Before you know it, it's spreading and spreading and spreading, and you destroy people's lives, marriages, and etc. Let me close with one last observation. The Beis Yosef wrote a sefer called the Magid Mishorim. These were the conversations that the Malach had with the Beis Yosef. At a certain point in the Beis Yosef's life, a Malach would come regularly and teach him sodos, certain secrets. Now, he didn't write them in Shulchan Aruch. There's only one mention in entire Shulchan Aruch of the Malach meeting with him, and the reason is because Shulchan Aruch is for man to paskin. It's supposed to go through the prison of the human experience. A Malach has no business mixing into the Psak Halacha. However, the Beis Yosef did write a separate sefer called Magid Mishorim, where he discusses the conversations that the Malach had with him. And the Malach described, he says, there are times when I watch people and I see them spending gold and silver, throwing it out. When they open their mouth to speak Lashon Hara, says the Malach to Beis Yosef, I witness and I see gold and silver coming out of their mouths. And I'd like to explain to you, I believe, what he was saying. There is something called thermophotography. If you're aware of this technology, it's a very interesting phenomenon. They'll take a thermophotographic camera and hold it outside a house, and you'll be able to tell where the heat leaks are. If your insulation is weak in a given area, you'll see actually on the film, or later put it on your computer, you'll see the areas of red because it's sensitive to heat, and it shows you the heat leaks. They also use these, firemen use them now. They'll go into a burning building and they can't find the kid under the bed in the smoke-filled room. Well, because these cameras are thermosensitive, sensitive to heat, they can tell the heat of the smoke versus the heat of the human body, and you'll see an image. The firemen will actually see an image of the baby under the bed, reach for him, save him. Okay. If you and I had a thermophotography and we saw other people speaking at that bar mitzvah, at that wedding, I think we'd be astounded and shocked. Literally, schusim after schusim, merit after merit, pouring out of their mouth, being given away. In one bar mitzvah, one wedding, you could destroy a month's worth of work, a year's worth of work. You could be a wonderful person. You could do so much chesed. You could be learning. You could be steiging. You can go into a particular situation, have a number of conversations, and just spill forth gold and silver, give up all of your schusim. And it's a very, very frightening concept. The Torah is makbir about Lashon Hara, not because the Torah is mean and draconian. The Torah is makbir about Lashon Hara because it's really damaging. And if it's not enough of a motivation, the fact that we'll violate many, many loses and oseis on a regular basis, the fact that I'm giving up merits that are so hard to acquire, my limudat Torah, my chesed, that which I'm working for, that which I'm so focused on, I give away the gold and the silver pours out of my mouth, that should be the greatest motivator for us to understand the Isser and for us to learn the Halachas. May Hashem grant us the wisdom and the ability to work on this and deal with it.